They are the worst invasive large mammal on the planet. They do very widespread crop damage. They will eat virtually anything. Their potential to be reservoirs of disease and to spread it to people, to pets, to other wildlife, and certainly to livestock. You can't just throw a match on a fire and then walk away and say, that's not my problem. That's just how fire works. You started the fire.
Hi, I'm Jay Ingram. Welcome to Anthropomania, the podcast where we obsess over the strange, weird, often hard-to-believe ways that humans relate to wildlife. Joining me as usual, Nikki Wilson. Hey, Nikki.
Hello, Jay.
And Erica Siren.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Let's jump right in. Those wild pigs we just heard about are what are called an invasive species, or aliens, or exotic or introduced species, settling somewhere where they've never been before. And at least in this case, they're running wild.
Such a great subject. I'm so excited to dig into this.
Yeah, this topic is near and dear to my heart. I wrote about it a couple years ago, these aliens among us, specifically a group of 400 to 600 pound, snorting, hairy, defecating aliens.
Jabba the Hutt, eat your heart out.
Exactly.
So that voice you heard off the top of the show was Dr. Ryan Brook, and he studies feral pigs, otherwise known as wild boar or feral swine. And these things are running around the prairies, ripping it up and spreading beyond there into the rest of Canada. They're also a huge problem in Europe, in the US, you know, California, Texas, and beyond, in Australia even.
So are these just normal pigs?
Yeah, well, that's the weird thing. They are just normal pigs. But think of the difference between a husky and a chihuahua. Same species, very different looking. So these aren't the cute little piglets of childhood stories. These are gigantic lawnmowers of animals that go about destroying everything. They're smart. They're hard to kill. You know, someone once called them an ecological time bomb, and that is accurate.
So, okay, they're wild versions of barnyard pigs. I don't get, like, how did that change happen?
Okay, Jay, so in the early 80s, Canada had this agricultural diversification program, and they allowed people to farm things like emus and to have captive elk, and the wild boar farm popped up as a result of that. Except the pigs didn't stay in the fences. They tunneled under them, they went over them or knocked them down, and some wily hunters, in some cases, sprung them from the pens so that they could establish a wild population to hunt. So now we've got a massive problem. And frankly, it's not just wild boars that are the problem. There are invasives all over the world. And we're going to get to that, including cocaine hippos. But first, I want to get back to my conversation with Ryan Brook.
Okay, my name is Dr. Ryan Brook. I'm an associate professor at the University of Saskatchewan in the College of Agriculture and Bioresources.
And so you've been studying wild pigs for the better part of a decade now. What's your most memorable experience?
We've had a lot of experiences and a few scary scenarios, but one that really hit home how insane these pigs are and how they just are so different was in 2017. I was in a little tiny Cessna and we were tracking the collared pigs. And normally what we do is we have a capture team of some people on the ground, several airplanes, and then a helicopter going to do the actual capture. We capture them with a net gun fired from a helicopter. So I was up first light, right at dawn, flying. And these pigs have collars, so of course we can find them, right? Or I always say, you can run, but you can't hide when you have a GPS collar on. So I pull up my smartphone. I say, okay, the last known location is right here. Let's fly straight to that point. We fly there and do a few circles, and all of a sudden we pick up the beeps coming out of the collar. Just goes beep, beep, beep. And if you have a receiver hooked up on your plane with the wings, have antenna on them, you can find the pig. And so I'm circling, telling the pilot, okay, left here, right here. And we get on top, and the signal is just boom, boom, boom. And my ears say, okay, immediately under our left wing right now, and we just circled waiting for the helicopter to show up. Helicopter comes with an infrared camera that can spot anything, right? How could we possibly have an issue here, right? Confidence is high. We've been doing this for probably this was day 10 or something of catching pigs. And the guys on the ground go in and snowmobile, and the helicopter's flying with infrared and said, "Ryan, there's no pig here." I said, "Well, there is. I can hear the signal." Said, "No, it lost the collar." I said, "Nope, I didn't. We've got active pinging. It has a different signal if the collar stops moving. There's a pig there." People went in on the ground. My grad student is standing on the ground with an antenna. He's saying, "Ryan is right. There is a pig directly north of me, less than 100 meters. And of course, when you have that kind of a crew, you're spending, you know, $25,000 a day, maybe $30,000 a day kind of deal. And so money is going and you're looking at your watch. And every time a helicopter blade goes around, I always say that's 37 cents. And of course, that blade is spinning so fast, you can't even see it. It's just a blur. And plane and all these people, and you're like, "Oh boy, this is, you know, it's minus 37, and I've got sweat dripping down the side of my forehead. Okay, guys, this is the real deal. We got to find this." And it was just gone. And it was, you know, there were some trees around, but it was a fairly open spot. And these guys get off and they're walking. And finally, one of the guys stopped to tie his boot, and he looked at ground level, and it just happened right in front of him. There was a little bit of ice and snow pushed up. And this very large, well over 400-pound male wild pig with a collar on it bulldogged itself under that ice and snow and didn't move. No matter helicopters, snowmobiles, people hearing the plane buzzing it, that didn't budge. And he found it like 5 feet away from where he was tying his boot. So that sort of really hit home to me, saying, "Oh my God, like, if it's that hard to find one animal that's already got a collar, how many people have been searching for pigs, trying to either hunt them for fun or food or to try and eradicate them, and just had to give up? Because without a GPS collar, I'm sure we would have given up a long time ago."
It is. It's terrifying and amazing all at once.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, especially because, yeah, they are so large and they can be dangerous, and they have razor sharp tusks. And, you know, the largest sow we handled in our program was 638 pounds. So, you know, it's just shy of 300 kilos. So they can be really, really large, but they're so smart and so well adapted. Probably the number one reason that wild pigs are such an aggressive and successful invasive species is they're just cranking out babies. So a female will have 6 young on average per litter, and multiple litters per year. So they're highly mobile, completely fearless, super smart, often primarily nocturnal. So when they get shot at, they get nervous and they just become nocturnal, and then nobody sees them. And so, yeah, all of those factors make them insanely successful invasive species.
Unbelievable. Do we know how to stop these pigs? Like, could we eradicate wild pigs in Canada? If so, how, or are we past the point?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, I would say, you know, if you take everything that's being done compared to what needs to be done, it's about 1% of what needs to be done. So I guess the correct answer is we have no idea, because we've never properly tried. Nobody in Canada has ever attempted a full-throated attempt at eradication. I do believe that there are some areas in Canada where eradication is no longer possible. For 11 years now, I've been studying pigs in the prairies, and people have asked this sort of question. And for 8 years, I said, "Well, eradication is possible, but that window is closing." And I said that for about 8 straight years, consistently over and over. And then last year, I stopped saying that. I don't believe that eradication is, we just simply missed the boat. It's been a serious, serious problem of way too little, way too late.
You know, Nikki, that is pretty dire. When you combine that idea that a guy can be a couple of meters, three or four meters away from a hiding boar who's hundreds of pounds and not be aware that it's there, is scary, actually, because these are huge and I think probably capable of being vicious beasts. But you go back to the beginning, and it was hunters who contributed to this mess by actually releasing them so they could hunt them. I'm assuming that when Ryan uses the word eradication, he basically means killing them off. And I don't understand why that couldn't work.
We actually had in Alberta this program where you could submit a couple pairs of boar ears and get yourself a $50 bounty. And part of that was, you know, trying to use hunting to get rid of them. But it turns out that they're just too smart for it. These pigs travel in these big groups called sounders. So, you know, 7, 14, 20 pigs. And if you only kill one or two of them, they learn from that. They get super crafty about how they're traveling. They kind of go dark. They start moving around at night. They actually just get smarter and more prolific, not the other way around. So hunting has not been an effective tool against these things.
But by hunting, you're killing. You're eliminating.
We're talking about slaughtering them. Let's be honest. I mean, there's so many.
Right. So hunting, eradication, they're kind of the same thing, if not exactly the same thing. And it kind of brings forward the point, you know, do we need a new approach? Some scientists are even saying, hold on, this isn't necessarily even a problem that needs eradication. And Arianne Wallach is one of those people.
My name is Arianne Wallach. I'm an ecologist with the Centre for Compassionate Conservation at the University of Technology in Sydney, Australia. I study all manner of creatures that people love to hate.
I don't know if you guys could hear, but Arianne's currently in Australia. And if you listen really closely, you can actually hear the cicadas chirping in the background. She's a conservationist herself, but offers a completely different perspective on the boars.
Those that are calling for the eradication of wild boar can do this until they're blue in the face. They are not going to succeed. The wild boar are going to win that particular fight. There will be a lot of blood, sweat, and tears in the meantime. A lot of creatures will be killed and a lot of people will have pretty awful, violent jobs. But it's not going to help anyone. I live in a country where killing wildlife for conservation has been done for decades. It never works. It always has unpredictable effects, generally counterintuitive. It often makes things worse than what had been just left things well alone. So I would say, leave the boar alone. And not only that, I would celebrate them.
Serious question here. What does celebrate even mean?
You know, it's a good question, and I'm not sure myself, but I think a good example of this is the cocaine hippos.
Ah, the cocaine hippos. My favorite invasive species. And you know what? They're the biggest invasive species in the world. Here's the story. Pablo Escobar, well-known drug king. If you've watched all the Cartel series on Netflix like I have, you know all about him. Super rich, international drug lord who built a zoo at his headquarters in Colombia. And in that zoo, many different animals, but four hippos, a male and three females. Escobar was killed by the cops in 1993. Some of the animals in the zoo were sold, but the hippos were just too unmanageable, so they just left them there. I remind you, one male, three females. They thrived, they reproduced, and they've spread as far as the Magdalena River. Now, to some people, they're a total menace, because you know, in Africa, they kill more humans than any other animal. And while so far casualties in Colombia are pretty limited, they're a threat. Ecologically, they threaten to alter the entire ecosystem and even eliminate some native species like manatees. That's one scientific view. And those scientists would say, like the wild boars, kill them by culling them out or sterilize them. Others, though, argue that hippos are a modern replacement for some animals that lived there tens of thousands of years ago and went extinct. So there's a bit of a controversy, and Arianne has a strong view on this.
And she was actually the person that was behind that work, saying that these cocaine hippos might actually have value in this new ecosystem.
The beautiful thing about the story of the cocaine hippos is that it kind of shakes loose all sorts of ideas about why we would call anyone invasive in the first place, and what does it mean to provide an ecological function. So every creature that is alive, every living being, including you and me, provide ecological functions. Everything that we do, that we eat, that we get eaten by, that we tread on, that we move, that we, you know. And in the case of hippos, because they are an endangered species and they're an iconic species, it's a bit harder to just brush them off as some creature that we don't care about and can only say bad things about. Specifically in their case, because we know that many years ago, several thousand years ago, the Americas were full of large beasts that we call megafauna, and these went extinct probably due to human hunting, somewhere between, let's say, 8 and 15,000 years ago. So essentially, we now know a world that is very different. So when, as conservationists, we're trying to conserve a particular kind of ecological state, it's already an ecological state that has changed a lot due to human activity. And we tend to think of human activity as somehow unnatural. But I can only reflect on this personally and reflect in awe at the audacity, at the pioneering capacity, at the agency and the sheer chutzpah of these hippos in escaping from the slavery that they were in by this big man that owned them. And they've taken their lives into their own hands. And in a glorious story of survival and daring, they are now a part of the Colombian ecosystem. And I can only marvel at that.
Wow, the word glorious isn't usually applied to Escobar's hippos. But, you know, we've talked about two really, really prominent examples, wild boars, cocaine hippos. But that doesn't really tell the story, does it? I mean, there's all kinds, there's hundreds, probably thousands of invasive species, most of which arrived in their new habitat because of humans, and frankly, humans being stupid.
And I think what these examples are showing us time and time again is that you can't be arrogant when you're moving species around the globe. And, you know, having said that, not all of them take, but the ones that do all have something in common. They're super fast reproducers. So like Norwegian rats can torpedo out 5 litters of 14 young.
Torpedo each. Them?
Yes, they torpedo them. We've got Burmese pythons in Florida that do well because they have no natural predators. So that's another reason. And they even eat crocodiles there. And then you've got the fact that these species are generalists. So they can literally live anywhere. So you look at something like the gypsy moth that actually came here by accident, as many species do, now can live on over 300 tree species in North America compared to other insects that specialize on a handful.
And I think it's crazy just how quickly they can expand. And the class example of this is the cane toad.
The Australian cane toad. Well, it wasn't Australian to begin with.
So it was from Central America, I think. But Australian farmers actually brought the cane toad over to Australia to deal with all these beetles that were eating up their sugarcane. Little did they know that those 2,000 or 2,500 they released into the wild would turn into 200 million cane toads today.
The 200 million resonates with the starling, a very obviously common North American bird. Okay, how about this for stupidity? 20 starlings were brought to Central Park in Manhattan in 1890 in the middle of the winter by a guy who wanted to bring every bird mentioned in Shakespeare's plays to North America. Starlings were mentioned once. In fact, it was one starling mentioned in Henry IV. Now 200 million.
That's a lot of starlings. What were the repercussions of that?
Well, some biologists would take the doom and gloom approach and argue that they have literally muscled, because they're quite strong little birds, muscled other birds out of potential nesting sites and caused those populations to diminish. But frankly, you see those beautiful videos of huge flocks of starlings swirling around in the sky. And I don't think people go, oh, I hate those birds. I think they just accept them now as part of the environment.
Yeah.
While we're on the literature tip, have you guys heard about the raccoons in Japan?
No.
These raccoons became popular as pets because of this cute little anime raccoon that was popular in the 1970s. And so they were shipped over to Japan, and all of a sudden people realized that an adult raccoon is nothing like a cute anime cartoon. And instead of killing them, they just released them back into the wild. And they've terrorized the island of Japan ever since. Funny story here. Japan is filled with Buddhist temples, and Buddhist people do not like killing things. However, this raccoon problem has gotten so bad in these temples that these Buddhist monks are foregoing their pacifism and just culling these raccoons in droves to control the problem.
That is such a crazy visual. That
sounds like a moral dilemma to me.
I know.
These are perfect examples. And I mean, I still have some questions, and I'd like to know what you guys think about the two main ones that we talked about. In the case of Escobar's hippos, there's an ongoing debate. It's very hard to sterilize a 4-ton animal, it turns out. And local people in Colombia actually are kind of split. And many of them like the fact the hippos are there because they attract tourists. Now, you know, you might think that's kind of dumb because hippos are extremely dangerous. And I actually had a brush, maybe exaggerating it, with a hippo when I was in Kenya. We were shooting some stories for Discovery Channel, and we needed some, just some, you know, what's called B-roll, just some extra footage of hippos. There's a pod of hippos in a lake. We get in a boat, my camera guy and me, and the guy with an outboard motor running the boat, and we approach them slowly. We're shooting video, approaching them. One hippo submerges, and the guy immediately turns the boat around full power the other direction because he knew that hippo was going to underwater approach us. And, you know, they kill more humans than any other animal in Africa. So that in the end might be the tipping point in Colombia. If they start wounding or killing people, I think it's going to change.
Wow. Yeah, it is.
Are boars dangerous, Nikki? Like, would you walk into a prairie where you knew there was a sounder of wild boars?
Yeah, I think they can be. I mean, like a lot of animals, they can be quite wary of people, especially if they've learned to be from watching their buddies hunted down. But if they're cornered or, you know, you come across an aggressive male, yeah, they can be really dangerous. And man, they have razor sharp tusks.
We've actually presented two very starkly different approaches to this. There's the approach that we must control invasive species, limit them, even eliminate them. And on the other hand, we shouldn't think of ourselves as guardians of the biosphere, and we should actually celebrate the fact that some species are making inroads into areas that they never lived in before. And, you know, for me, you guys, I'm not sure where to land in on between one or the other of those.
Well, you know, the World Conservation Unit considers invasive species as the second biggest threat to biodiversity. So I don't really think we can take a hands-off approach here. And I don't even think we know the impact some of these might have. They might have huge societal costs, like boar, that's costing the U.S. billions of dollars.
I think that's the point. It is still hard to predict when a non-native species will become invasive. And when you do realize that, it's often too late.
Things are occurring at different scales. And, you know, we don't need to give up. There are things we can do. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution. For example, with Ryan Brook and the wild boars, they've set up a way you can actually see where the feral pigs are.
The Canadian Wild Pig Research Project is on Facebook. And if people are interested, they can actually go on there and download maps for each province and show where the pigs are. And for the prairie provinces, we have a Google Earth file. You download it, double click, and it opens a distribution map of pigs in Google Earth. So you can pan around, you can zoom in, you can turn that layer off and look at the habitat underneath. And you can say, okay, well, I'm interested in going hiking here. What is the pig situation? Or I'm a farmer living here and I wanted to see what the lay of the land is around my farm, or zoom out and see the bigger picture. And you can take a lot of that, you know, right into your own home and see what the situation is in your own backyard.
Let's shake it out.
All right. All right.
Thanks a lot, Nikki, Erica.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. Just going to go make myself some bacon.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
You guys, be serious. This has been Anthropomania. Thanks for listening. On our next episode, the crazy world of taxidermy.
People think that I'm like an undertaker or a mortician. They think that we're taking the animals and draining the blood and filling them with formaldehyde or something. They don't understand that none of the bones, muscle, or organs are typically in there.
You can subscribe to Anthropomania on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or whatever your favorite podcast app is. If you like us, rate and review, please do that and tell your friends about us. You can listen on our website, anthropomania.com, and sign up for the newsletter.
Check out our show notes, where you'll find a link to Ryan's work and photos of his boar research. You'll find links to Arian's work, and you'll find a link to the article I wrote on those feral swine for Alberta views. We would love to hear what you think of Anthropomania. Please take 30 seconds to fill out our listener survey, which you can find in our show notes or on our website. Thanks so much for being here. Catch you next time.